Midwinter 99, and that's Karen.
Gavura Shebaherd.
All right. Benyan Smichas Shmitin Lahar Sinai. Concerning the topic of the juxtaposition of Shmicha to Har Sinai.
What did you say, William?
Page 199. Left column.
Okay.
Because the Torah writes at the beginning of the parsha that Hashem spoke this at Har Sinai, and the Mefarshim raised, why specifically is that mentioned by this mitzvah of Shemitah? Yuvan al pi ha-mishnah ha-mekayimis ha-torah me'oni sofo l'kayimah me'osher. We can understand this through the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. One who fulfills the Torah out of poverty, in the end, shall fulfill it out of wealth. There is a nisayon, a trial, a test, a challenge for an ani who is within his state of impoverishment. Page 199. How you doing?
Okay.
All right. Left column. So there's a nisayon there. The ani has a challenge because he has to live his life in poverty, and it raises many tests. The eshla usher nisayon, and also the wealthy person has his test as well. Shelo yarum libo v'ashro lishkoach es Hashem isparach. Not to elevate his heart, meaning not to become haughty and arrogant in his wealth, and to forget about Hashem isparach. V'hamakayim ha-Torah me'oni. One who fulfills the Torah out of poverty. Zocha sheyikayimena v'osher. He will merit that he will fulfill the Torah through wealth, and then this person who has first experienced poverty and then comes to fulfill Torah through wealth, he will be zocha, when it says to fulfill it through wealth, not to kick through his wealth, meaning not to forget Hashem in his wealth. He's been poor. He knows the struggle. When he comes to his wealth and to live Torah in that way, he's not going to forget about Hashem because he's already had experience in poverty. We're on page 199 in the left column, about 5 lines in the second paragraph. The word yiva'et, which means to kick, right? That means to say that a person is in a certain position and then they're kicking away other things. There's likewise the Jewish people as a whole, when we lived in the wilderness after we left Mitzrayim. We experienced vayyancha, which means God afflicted us. It was not easy to live in that way. And vayyari vecha, there was hunger. We desired food, we desired meat. V'hoye zeh hachana sheyikaymenu acharkach ha-Torah. This was a preparation for us that we would later fulfill the Torah, Beretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, mitocha osher, from wealth. So it's an interesting analogy that what on a personal level is experiencing the fulfillment of Torah through poverty and then through wealth, on a collective level we experienced by going through the Midbar, even though we were provided for there, but you can see that there was always an anxiousness there about what they had, what they didn't have, and ultimately they would go into a settled land, Eretz Yisrael, and then fulfill the Torah through wealth, through having. The Hi Ha'etza Sheyo'atza HaTorah Bishmitin V'yavla. He says, this is the counsel that the Torah gave us through the mitzvah of Shemitah, laying the land fallow every 7 years, and Yovel, the 50th year. Shalom la'asos ikar ba'avodas va'adam ha'lishboth bishmita lishmo yisbarach. Not to work the ground and to make sure that the year had its year of rest, l'shem Hashem. V'gam ha'tzdaka la'anim. Once out of 7 years, because in that year of Shemitah, everybody's produce is hefker, anybody can come and take it. So that the poor are provided for it as well. Shayadeza yiskayim birchas ha'oris biyodam, and through laying the land fallow, for the other years it will receive its blessing. V'azem mevorchin oso yisbor ha'shemo b'rav, zantonu u'besava kil kaltonu. This is one of the brachas that we say to Hashem. Barav Zantanu, you sustained us even during hunger. Ubasava, and during years of plenty, Kilkaltanu, you provided for us. Why is that said in the same phrase? Ma Shemaz Min Lanu Mozom Be'ez Harav, that which God does provide some food for us at a time of hunger. Uma Shenose Lanu Da'as L'Kabo HaMozom Ra'ui, and then giving us the ability to accept when we are provided for more plentifully, properly. Zeh birchas eretz Yisrael, eretz tova urechava. This is the blessing of the land of Israel, the land of good and plenty. So he's pointing out here that we can never really lose sight of the concept of what it means to lack, even when we have plenty. And that the ability to focus on that will actually allow us to experience the years of plenty in a more generous and a productive way. In the midst of the productiveness of Eretz Yisrael, we take a year off and we recognize what the land is, and that it's resting, and that we provide for the poor. It's for ourselves as well. And we shouldn't just think that we're providing for the poor, which is a great thing, but we're gaining the balance and perspective during this experience.
I was just listening to a tape from an address given by Rav Nachman Bullman. He told an interesting story very related to this Torah. He was on a plane once traveling, and he happened to see an article in the Jerusalem Post. And he sort of gave the background about how the Jerusalem Post had such a tradition of being very anti-religious and anti-Jewish in many ways. So this article was written by a man named David Tursky, and it was called The Fall of the Second Chernobyl. And he told about his family background, that he comes from the Tursky lineage, and gave background on the Tursky Rabbanim and Rebbes and so on. And then he talked about his great-grandfather, who as a 19th century intellectual, kind of said that he abandoned the ways of Torah and the ways of Hashem, and said it's a time for that, you know, beseeching God, it's not no longer a path. If we're going to redeem ourselves, it has to be through our own hands and our own efforts and so on. And then he went and used the metaphor of nuclear power as being the ultimate or the transcendent idea or accomplishment of human strength. Kofi Vatsam Yadi, the strength of a person's hand. And how with the explosion at Chernobyl, that it was sort of the fall of that whole ideology. And we see this very much here, the whole idea of, you know, our labors and our accomplishments in times of narrowness and so on. And despite all that, to say it's really in God's hands how that the bracha is. And that's a quality of Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. There's walking away, meaning to say you're not permitted to plow, you're not permitted to plant.
Whatever crop.
Right. Whatever grows on its own can grow, but it can't be harvested for commercial reasons.
It's Yovel's 2 years, right?
Yeah. But it's Yovel's 2 years.
So in that sense, then Hashem, before that, in the 6 year, gave us food for 6, 7, and 8.
Right, and
that's the bracha sometimes for 3 years.
Yeah, because it's a yovel.
So, if the land, some of the land that's in Eretz Yisrael, it's been reclaimed land that was once a desert.
Right.
So, and it's been changed into a farming.
Right.
But if you leave it alone for a year, in some cases now you can bring it to it. And it would revert back to its natural state, and then it would take another year or so to get it back to be grossed up again, and that could cause undue hardship to people.
That wouldn't happen in the desert, though, Avram.
that. But even so, even let's say considering that it might, but nonetheless, it's not permitted.
What was the?
You have to let it go.
So they have a ban. I know initially, but they not some other thing. People that own them, lease it to Arabs.
Yeah, that's called a Hetzer Mafira. That's actually sold for a period of time to Arabs, but it's not relied upon by all authorities.
Okay, so there's land where things could be. You have three different states. Then. You have one state of land where the legal owner.
Right.
Another state of land where the Arabs could like just take care of it, but not grow anything. And this is third state of land where the Arabs could grow it for profit, which the Jew cannot benefit from.
Correct. And I believe I might be wrong, that the second category is also prohibited, just maintaining it, to my knowledge.
Because I know the Jewish National Fund has a lot of problems with that.
That's a very, very challenging year.
Can we eat that?
No.
No, see, that's part of the whole thing.
Anything grown there during
we grew in Gaza, we were allowed to eat that.
Why?
I think. I'm trying to remember.
Well, it was not in Israel?
Right.
It was in Israel proper. And also, the hydroponics also solved that problem, because the things that are not growing out of land as well are exempt in that respect.
So it was Rav Kook who was kind of a major force behind the Heter Mechira.
Yes, although there are those who say that even those who went along with that may not agree with that at this time. I just read it yesterday, but now the reason why just slipped my mind. There are those who say that the postkin who relied on the Heter Mechira then may not possibly rely on it now. And I just,
when you're saying may not, is that a command or is that
speculating? No, they're speculating. If they were alive in this situation, they would not have relied on
what's
it.
What's changed?
There was a very fundamental difference. I just read it yesterday, and I just...
Short-term memory loss.
Yes, fruit trees, grass, even flowers that are grown for fragrance are
that
under
sometimes
that.
Sometimes you see fruit just sitting on a tree and not putting
fruit. In those years, in there's yourself, possibly, yeah.
But does that mean anybody can come in and just pick it?
Yeah, no, I don't know how that works exactly, in the fact that they are hefker, which means a person can come along and take it. I don't know how that works and if there are parameters. I do know that if you remember the Shemitah year a couple of years ago, a worldwide fund was established for farmers who held by Shemitah to help them through the year. And there was a tremendous increase this past Shemitah year of farmers who kept the laws of Shemitah than the previous years. It's considered a very great thing, because one of the reasons we were exiled from the land of Israel is because we didn't keep Shemitah.
Well, I heard a story. Yeah. I heard a story a while ago. Through the Discovery Series, and they said that maybe I don't know how many years ago, but there was a lot of kibbutzes that didn't keep the Shemitah.
Right.
There was one kibbutz that did, and they had locusts come over and they ate everything. All the kibbutzes that didn't keep, but they like made like a wide around the one that did. They, I don't know if you heard that.
I didn't hear it. I'd like to hear it. It'd be interesting to hear.
Shemitah locusts.
Interesting.
Made like a U-turn.
Interesting. I never saw that before.
That's so much. Is Hashem supposed to provide,
right,
for those who keep the Shemitah year? Then why do you need a worldwide fund?
Maybe that's how we provide.
Or do you first need have to, right, or is that one of the ways you provide?
Just
like
so.
You said, everybody.
Or do you first have to start keeping it before, like, you know, I guess you can't just say, well, look at this harvest we got last year.
Right.
I just see for myself, you know, just if somebody said to me, okay, you know, you just have to trust in God, right, for a year, I mean, for a week, I would be nuts.
Right.
A week.
Mm-hmm. Is that a
garden? Well, if you live in Israel, it would apply. It only applies to the land of Israel. But if you had a garden there, absolutely. Yeah. Sure.
Only in the ground.
I thought you said for commercial purposes.
Well, if you're growing them, you mean Oh, you're just growing them for your own.
Yeah, you're allowed to grow food for yourself, right? You have to be able to eat.
I think it's still hefted.
Really?
I think so. I think it's still hefted. I think it's still considered to be onerous.
So,
to my knowledge.
How does that work? I'm sure this has come up. Like, say you had a garden in the Israeli embassy in the United States or Berlin or something.
But it's not the land of Israel.
It's not considered the land of Israel, although, you know, in the laws of our country, that's considered the land of Israel, but not a law of the right. That's right. Interesting question.
Just eating piles of fruit.
The embassy grounds in Washington.
What is an Israel for?
And anybody can get past the security is welcome to the great groups. So we are on Ki Lahamaiho Nitzrach Koach Hazon Bahamaakel Bahadoka. In food there are three powers. The power of sustenance is required, it sustains us. Ma'akel means it needs to be digested in our body. And thirdly, docha, which means the elimination of waste. Zayin and Gimel HaBrachos. This is the concept of the three brachos. Vamru Chazal, Moshe Rabbeinu, Tikein Birchas Hazan, meaning the three brachos of Benjamin. Moshe Rabbeinu instituted the first paragraph, meaning to say its text, because we're commanded to Benjamin HaTorah, but the wording for it was implemented by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's called Birchas Hazan. Kishahorid Manu Haman, when he brought down man for us from Shemayim. Shezehoya Hafrakas Hamazon Bamidvar Shehoyu Chaseri Mikol. This was the coming forth of food and provision in the desert, because we were lacking all things there. So that was the coming forth of sustenance. So Kishanichnasu Loretz, when we came into Eretz Yisrael, and then the second paragraph, its text was implemented by Yehoshua. Hoya habracha al ha'oretz. The second bracha, noda lecha, in benching, that refers to the Eretz Yisrael. Shehu nivchar mikol ha'aretzos. It is the most choice of all lands. Sheyecholim lekabel ha'maychol kura'ui lazun ha'nefesh shalo leva'ed mitoch ha'sova. This is the bracha of Eretz Yisrael, is the ability to absorb sustenance, what we call digestion, to absorb it within us and to absorb that sustenance without forgetting about God. So that's the power of Eretz Yisrael.
And that's the power of that second bracha you're
right.
saying too, then.
That's right. Zehu b'chinas hama'akel, this is the concept of digestion. Sheyihiyeh hamazon l'toelet ha'nitzrach, that the provision, that the food will serve its desired goal to sustain our body, be absorbed, and not forget about God in that process.
So it's a vitamin.
Okay.
Is the mitzvah of benching, the Doraisa,
yeah.
is it included amongst the category of believing in God for goyim, for shevet mitzvahs of minyan?
You mean are they required to bench?
Are they required to bench?
No. It's a nice thing, you know, they would thank God for their food, but they don't have the mitzvah of benching.
They don't have the mitzvah of hazanah sakal.
Right.
It would seem one of the things that this is saying is that the first bracha was given outside of Eretz Yisrael, and for all food that comes, so to speak, from God. And the second one, the second category, the specialness of things that come from Eretz Yisrael, and also the specialness of things that come through the combination of our own effort and divine providence.
Right. Nonetheless, happens to be that's not the case.
Yeah. Sorry, trying to say that the life force in the food, after we eat it and then we do the, let's say the second bracha of Noda, that at that point that we complete?
Almost, because we have one more step.
Right, I mean complete the nourishment part.
We're nourished, and we're nourished in a way that
so
we
it's
still...
So spiritual and physical nourishment at that point.
That's right. We maintain our allegiance to God without forgetting about him and the fact that we're satisfied.
By benching.
Mm-hmm. And that's the power of Eretz Yisrael. Zev Esavva Kil Kaltana. This refers to being provided for or sustained even in plenty, meaning to say not to forget about God even though we have our sustenance. Achar Kach Shishanivna Yerushalayim. The third bracha of benching, its text
was made by David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech in the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, which was accomplished in their time. Haya HaBracha Abichinas HaDocha. The third bracha then refers to the elimination of waste. Ki al yidei binyan beis hamikdash haya birur ha'ochel b'lib soleh. He says, through the building of the Beis HaMikdash was the concept of the full and ultimate separation of that which is food from that which is waste. Interesting idea. Let's see if he elaborates a little bit. L'chein dorshu hatova zu Yerushalayim. That's why when it says the word hatova there, that refers to Yerushalayim. Shehoya birur hatov mita'arubis tov barach.
So it refers
to the selection, the processing out of good from its previous state of confusion with evil.
So this is the phrase where Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Tova Urachava.
Right.
And Yerushalayim is called specifically Tova.
Right.
And Rechava is called Rechava.
You can really recognize the good. I saw that, for example, after we digest, in other words, we're absorbing our food, then we eliminate waste, the human process of elimination of waste. And at that point, that which is truly food and good remains with you. It's there, it becomes part of you, and that which is not has been cast aside. Not certainly to Varenu, now returning to our thought, Ki haman bamidbor vayancha Toya hakona shayuklu lekabo ha'ashirus kura'ui achar kach b'chnisasa Eretz Yisrael. The receiving of mun in the desert was underneath the domain of la'ya'ancha, that Hashem afflicted us. It's an interesting thing. This was a preparation to be able to receive wealth and plenty later when we came to the land of Israel. So even though mun was a great miracle, one of the greatest miracles of all time, it happened daily, but there was something about it that was very difficult and challenging, because they knew at every day that their food had to fall from heaven, and as we learned, and they had to go and chase around for it. There was something about it that I think produced a certain amount of anxiousness. L'chein tala ha'kasuv shmitin v'yoglos tikun ha'oretz b'har Sinai. Therefore, when the Torah says that Shemitah and Yovel was given at Har Sinai, which refers to the Tikkun, the ultimate rectification of Eretz Yisrael, they attached it to Har Sinai. So if you see it, Kain lahatil fa b'acharisafa, to do you good, to do good for you later on. Uba'emes, im haya mekaimin b'shleimus ha'tora me'ani lo haya hagol. Because then the truth is that if we would fulfill the Torah, ultimately, even in poverty, we would not have exile. But we had those who transgressed in the desert as well. This is what he's saying. That in that period of preparation, when we lived in the Midbar for 40 years, we were being challenged in our areas of provision, being provided for by God. It was very challenging. You know, struggles with food, with water that they experienced there. They said, had they truly endured that in its complete way, we would never have had to experience both. We would have gone into Eretz Yisrael and that would have been that. But there were those who went astray in the Midbar too. V'lachein nifkayim acharkach gam kein banu seifa demas nisan hamavatul hatora me'osher sofo levat lemeyoni. And that's the meaning of the second half of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where it says, one who forsakes Torah out of a state of wealth will ultimately forsake it out of a state of poverty.
So who are they talking about specifically here? Is he referring to the Meraglim? Is he referring to the man who gathered man on Shabbos?
If he's talking about them, or if he's talking about that we complained about not having meat,
uh-huh.
I don't know.
For the property of middle class?
Pardon?
For the property of the middle class?
Torah? No, Torah is a property of all. Torah is a property of all.
People will reject this kind of extreme office in poverty.
Well, everybody feels they're in one of the other.
He said if you fulfill Torah, out of poverty, you will ultimately fulfill it out of wealth. If you forsake Torah out of wealth, you will ultimately forsake it out of poverty. So you're saying what happened to the middle ground there, right?
But there is a middle ground. He's not trying to make a claim.
What happens if you fulfill Torah out of...
Who feels like they're a middle class?
Out of being provided for.
What do you mean?
It does seem to go from one side to the other. Right?
Well, I think he's just making a statement. You know?
Well, that's a Mishnah. That's a Mishnah, right? But why did the Mishnah concentrate on the extremes?
Right, the will.
Osher and Oni.
Well, we came out of Mitzrayim being an Oni. Maybe when we got to Eretz Yisrael, the gift made us wealthy.
But he's also saying explicitly that the being in the Midbar was Osher. Right?
It seems to be both.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was only because of the Mitzionos, right. But it was Osher because we were provided for it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's really the approach, that in every state, you know, poor, middle class, wealthy, you always have needs and you have things that you don't have, and you always have things that you do have. In every state. And there's a concept of poverty and wealth in every state, in every economic state. You see plenty of wealthy people who don't have a lot of things they wish they had. And you see poor people who feel like they're blessed.
Well, then you have to get rid of the idea of wealth and linking it to monetary. You can't link it then. Because what's wealth? Having lots of children?
Samath Patelka. The mission already told us, isn't it? Well, who's wealthy is a person who's happy with what they have.
And linking wealth to what you think you need.
But
you have.
Right. It's broader than just financial.
Well,
right.
Maybe he's also talking about Ani being the state, also the reciprocity between our own effort and having faith in God.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, I guess, would be which is which. Ani being when you have no strength. If you keep the Torah when you have no strength, so to speak, to do your own effort to make yourself wealthy, then eventually you'll have the strength to make yourself wealthy and have Torah.
Going back to the affliction in the Midbar,
yes.
There's two parts to that. Like you said, they were anxious because maybe they didn't have enough to talk on today. The money comes today, the money will come tomorrow.
Right.
We'll worry about it then. But also, the deeper task because if they're provided for and they need a sense of initiative, which they'll need when they get to the land.
True. And that's something that's ongoing, you know, historically.
So the person who feels provided for, who is provided for, but still has needs, he's not going to look for that. He's not going to look to work on his own and expect everything to be provided for. The person who isn't provided for just feels anxious all the time because he doesn't know where it comes from.
Yes,
let me say that the money, if the money's falling away, it's the same to bring it to our lives here and things are not working or having a different way at the same thing. So it's a sign.
Right, it does have its version, you know, in modern life. And certainly we experience them. Kamosha Kasev, as it's written, Tachas Asher Yavadatas Hashem Lakafa B'Simcha Me'roz Kol. That's a passage from the Tachachat. Which is a one not speaking well. We did not serve God in Simcha Merov Kol because we had too much. That's one of Moshe Rabbeinu's statements to our Kadosh Baruch Hu when the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf. The Moshe Rabbeinu told to Hashem, he said that it's your fault. Because you gave them so much gold and so much wealth that it brought them to this. one of the times that he had in Hashem.
I looked at the connection between this and something I think you had alluded to once ago, but also in this parsha about redeeming the cities, redeeming your property if you live in a walled city, or you live out in the field. If it's, you know, out the field, you can always get it back, and it's walled, so you have to do it in a year. It's like when you live out outside, it's like you're depending more on God.
On Hashem.
Whereas in the city, you depend more on the people. That more faith in Hashem is going to work out for you, and you'll be able to have that. You're going to be doing the city.
Right. Very good. I think we did look down this last service, actually.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Very nice.
Shukar.